All she does is wander around running into dudes, and they're like, they say, "What? You mean you don't remember me?" And all I can think is that this girl is some raging alcoholic who gets drunk, in like bars, and then goes home with dudes for like a one night stand. You know, "You don't remember me?" "No, I don't. Oh my god. Oh no, don't tell me what I did. It's too embarrassing. I don't want to know my true self." You just heard the song "God Fate" from the anime Hakenden by the artist Feilan. And this is episode 164 of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, broadcasting live from Japan, where our sole mission is to make your anime addiction
worse.
Stole most of it there, sorry.
Yeah, you just ran with that one today, Mitsugi.
I know, I'm on fire today.
Oh man, he's on fire.
I am your host, Mitsugi, today, and I am joined by my co-hosts, Chiaki and Cram. Say hello to the people around the world.
Hello, people around the world.
What's up, everybody?
You can find us at our brand new homepage, www.aaapodcast.com. We're also on iTunes, so come check us out on iTunes and Facebook, a newly revived Facebook, facebook.com/AnimeAddictsAnonymousPodcast.
And Twitter.
Live photo stream on Twitter, and live every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on ustream.tv. Check us out.
Keeping
there.
It real.
We have new forum members today.
No.
But first, how are you guys?
I'm fine, but I don't believe that we have new forum members, do we?
I don't either. You need to prove this to us, Mitsugi.
Well, you can go to the forum and click on the members button. And after that, you can sort them by the date they joined.
Mitsugi, that's too much work. Can't you just read us the names?
I'm lazy, Mitsugi. Do it for me.
Bunch of children. Jeez. We have some new forum members. Mystifying Mints. Love that name. Cactuar Kid. I love that name even better. Nocturnal Fae. Cool Manio. Haro Meister. And Billing. So, welcome to the forum. I'm taking Cactuar Kid. I love my subaltern.
I'll take Billing. I'm not quite sure how to say his name, because it's not really Billing. It's like Billing. So.
You'll figure it out.
I like Mystifying Mints. That's good for me.
It is.
Alliteration is nice. I like it.
It is very nice. Yeah, I agree. The trivia was apparently not that easy, although I thought it was. Good lord. Well, there aren't too many characters that wear a tutu that are pink.
I don't think I showed the tutu in the picture, though.
I think you did, and the crown.
No, I think I just had the back of her head.
Well, while you check that, the correct answer was Princess Tutu.
Yeah, I didn't. I showed maybe the base of the crown and no tutu.
Now, so. Maybe it wasn't that easy, but yes, as the chat says, it felt easy. The hair was easy. I don't know. Kaze-kun, Manly Mudkip, Nelly, 1876, Reiji, Astrophysics, and Mr. Freelance all get the answer correct, which was Princess Tutu. And the winner for the week was Reiji. Congratulations, sir.
Congratulations, Reiji. And the new trivia will be up in about 3.6 seconds from now. So if you're listening to this on iTunes, it's been up for a couple days.
And again, I won't know it because Chiaki's mission in life is to pick trivia questions that I don't know. Because I feel bad.
How did you find out, Mitsuki?
I think it's 3 years of working with you. I figured it out, finally. Speaking of trivia, we went on the Anivision podcast last night for their 150th episode.
And they made us feel bad about ourselves.
Anivision is at www.anivision.org, and we played the most brutally difficult game of anime trivia I've ever played. It consisted of, here are two very vague clues that will reveal almost nothing, and then you can have the bottom five names from the cast. the bottom six. Like, okay.
And the two clues are something from a person's review. So they're not even like a summary.
Oh, Doug Benson does that on his podcast. He's a comedian, and he does it with just movies using the Leonard Maltin app. And that's exactly how he does it, is uses his review and the bottom five names or whatever.
If you want to see Chiaki and Mitsuki battle it out for supremacy, I won't tell you who wins. Go check out episode 150 of Anivision at anivision.org. So,
Chiaki confesses it wasn't her best showing, but it was a lot of fun. It was great to be on the show with those guys.
So, we're moving right along. Mailbag. Love the AAA mailbag. You can go to the mailbag button on the top page of the website and easily submit your questions. We have a rule that as long as it actually is a question, I have had people submit mailbag questions that weren't actual questions.
Telling us we did something wrong.
We will answer it, so
sometimes
regardless.
Sometimes you guys send really sweet things, though, so yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I do appreciate sweet things sometimes, and Chiaki especially. So the mailbag this week is from Yotaro Vegeta, and the question is, who are your favorite mad scientists?
Is this from anime only, or like all...
I don't know.
Like narrative
media. If you have no favorite mad scientist from anime, then I guess you can just pick whatever you want and for the sake of answering.
For anime, I would say Dr. Gero from Dragon Ball Z. Definitely. And then from anything, probably Dr. Emmett Brown from Back to the Future.
The chat says Dr. Eggman. Do like my Sonic.
I was, the first one that popped into my mind was Dr. Tenma from, not from Monster, because he's not really a mad scientist, but Dr. Tenma from Astro Boy. Going way back in the day.
Yeah.
I dig him.
I think a mad scientist doesn't necessarily have to be bad, hence my choice of Dr. Emmett Brown. But
well, if that's the case, I'm picking Dr. Brief.
Oh, yeah. He's
pretty
crazy.
He's funny as hell.
And I love Scratches, his little cat.
And his wife, who looks 40 years younger than him.
Isn't the cat's name Scratches? I think it is.
I don't know. I have no idea. But he doesn't kick the cat around after it's dead like Hamdo.
Oh, Kaze-kun has a good one. Dr. Horrible's amazing.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. Whenever I do my laundry, I'm singing, Laundry Day, see you there, under things, tumbling. And I'm not going to sing anything else, otherwise we're going to get a nasty letter about copyright or something. But no, I love Dr. Horrible. Oh, Dr. Horrible.
Okay.
Oh, Neil Patrick Harris, why are you gay?
We have a lot of announcements, so for the sake of time, I'm going to push us along a little bit.
Stop pushing.
So, Chiaki has an announcement about a logo change on iTunes, which will probably happen soon.
I do. If you've been to our new site, you've probably noticed that we are adapting a new logo. You might be thinking, oh no, what's happening to you, Mitsuki? Nothing. Nothing. We've talked to her about this. But yes, it is coming. We've mentioned it before. And don't freak out. Your Mitsuki's cool with it. Everyone's cool with it. So you should be cool with it.
She was tired of looking like a hoe on the website anyway. So she's like, you know what? I'm gonna wear more clothes this time. No more slut outfit.
Yeah.
I'm going for the modest look.
Well, she's still wearing hot pants. So and got that Zetai Ryoiki going. So I don't really
I'd
know
still hit it.
Say she's going for modesty, but yeah.
Okay, so don't panic. There is a logo change coming.
Don't panic and grab your towel.
I knew that was coming.
Okay. The next announcement
those
is that...
Those of you who know Hitchhikers and those of you who don't.
The next announcement is that on the 17th of February, we will be doing our 2012 Anime Oscars episode, which we did last year, and we were joined by our good friend Felix Alberne, whom we will be joined by once again to do the Best Anime of 2012 award show.
I know all of the anime characters are really excited to attend, and I think the red carpet this year is just going to be fantastic.
And, oh, I know, I can't wait to see what Muta wears to the Oscars.
I can't wait to see who Muta brings.
You women.
I have no joke.
So, basically, we have polled many other anime podcasts, and as the results come in from their voting, we will have our award show. Which is not only our opinion, but the opinion of most of the most reputable anime podcasts online, so it's,
as reputable as you think any of our opinions are.
As credible of an award show as we can make it, so. Yeah, so that's on the 17th of February, and also, next week is the Super Bowl, so I cannot guarantee that there will be a podcast episode at this time, but there will be an announcement.
Oh, Mitsugi. But speaking of announcements...
No, in all fairness, nobody would watch because it's the Super Bowl. 190 million people watched the Super Bowl last year. 190 million televisions.
I mean, but to be fair, I think there's very little crossover between anime fandom and Super Bowl football fandom.
I think you're wrong.
I think you're kind of a rare case.
Even people... Even people that don't watch football watch the Super Bowl for the commercials.
But you know what also reminds me of football? Wasabi anime. Did you like that smooth transition there, boys?
I did. That
super
was great.
Smooth.
No, our good friends at Wasabi Anime, Tom Karum and those guys, are putting on the Florida Anime Experience again. It's the Southeast Anime Convention about anime. It's a purist anime convention. We went to it last year. We did the viewing room. It was a great little con. Actually, it really wasn't even that little for a first-year con. But
very well organized.
Everything ran smoothly. Everything from what I could tell worked, and it was a fantastic thing. But it's going to return for its third year. Third year? Was that 2 years? Whoa, it was. Last year wasn't its first year. It was its second year. Wow, Chiaki is going crazy. But it will be Memorial Day weekend, May 24th to the 26th, 2013, at the International Palms Resort and Convention Center in Orlando. That's where it was last year. The event's Legends of Anime is the theme from previous years, and the guest of honor in 2013 is Molly Flanagan, who was the voice of Naruto. Cassandra Lee Morris, the voice of Ritsu in K-On!, will also be there, so all of you K-On! Fans will probably be happy about that. It also has Florida's only exclusively Japanese video game room. If it didn't come from Japan, they don't do it at the convention. And of
lots
course,
of porn games. Just kidding.
And
but
of course,
last year there was that one game. Was it Love?
It was Galgun.
Galgun. It's as close to a porn as it can get.
I'm sure they'll have that game again. But there's also, of course, the anime viewing room, artist alley, contest, dance parties, fan panels, vendors room. And the costume contest winner will win a trip, airfare, hotel, and four-day admission to Anime Expo 2013. What a freaking awesome costume contest winner. Damn. Chiaki wishes she could compete.
You mean the prize isn't a 3-DVD box set of pre-tier? Sponsored by Aniplex?
No, it isn't.
You mean the prize isn't a $25 gift certificate to the comic book shop downtown Tampa?
It isn't.
Oh my gosh.
So if all of this has made you excited, and it should, it's a great convention. I recommend it. Tickets at the door are going to be $20 for Friday or Sunday, $25 for Saturday, and $40 for the weekend. Children under 3 get in free with a paid adult, so if you are an otaku mommy or daddy, or just a regular anime fan, not an otaku mommy or daddy, we take all types. You can bring your children and start to expose them to confunk at a young age. Though I will say, I've heard that confunk in lungs under 8 months old can be damaging for the child's health.
Stunts their growth, I think.
Yeah, so you really should be careful about that. Maybe bring like a confunk change color wristband. We should sell those.
I was going to say, it's been scientifically proven that confunk for children under the age of 4 can cause brain damage and violent outbursts.
Oh. But...
Hi, Tom. So what is our main topic today?
Our main topic today is what's suggested by Chiaki. Oh,
whoa. Whoa.
I thought it would be fun if we all created the ultimate anime marathon. So we will be talking about that.
12-hour anime marathon, what we think you should watch to get the most bang out of your 12 hours. Then we have a pile of impressions to do.
It's that time of the year.
We have a Vivid Red Operation, Boku no Imoto ga Osaka Okan, Amnesia, and Bakumatsu Gijinden Roman. And then we are going to do a review on Code Breaker.
Woo.
So, stay tuned, and we will be back shortly.
You Australian anime fans out there, this is Chiaki, and this is your Anime News Break. First up, Bankai Namco Games has made a very special announcement, especially if you are a fan of the Tales series and or a general JRPG and anime video game fan. They've recently announced that the 2013 Tales of Festival event that is geared around their Tales of franchise role-playing game is going to take place June 1st and 2nd, that's a weekend, this year. The festival is going to be at the Yokohama Arena in, well, Yokohama. There are many people coming to this event and lots of great names, especially if you're a fan of Tales of Symphonia, Tales of Destiny, Tales of Graces, or Tales of Xillia. Tales of Hearts and Tales of Xillia 2, as well as Abyss, are also in there. Some of the big character voice names include Sharia Barnes, Lion Magnus, and Zelos Wilder. So, if you're a fan, it's definitely going to be happening here in Japan. In other news for you video game fans still, Nipponichi Software, or NIS, CEO Sohei Nikawa has recently told the Mainichi Shinbun, a large newspaper here in Japan, that his company is working on an anime adaptation for its game, Kamisama to Unmei Kakumei no Paradox, God and the Destiny Revolution Paradox role-playing game. Nikawa had said previously, when the game was coming out, that things weren't entirely decided, but that a television anime project was already advancing and they really want to realize it. So, it looks like there will be an anime coming for you fans of that game. And in other news of anime coming out, the Shogakukan's Weekly Shonen Sunday magazine has recently announced that Hiroshi Fukuda's Jōu Shenjun Mushi Bugyō action manga is going to be turned into an anime this spring. Seven arcs pictures of Seikirei, Dog Days, and Magical Lyrical Girl Nanoha will be animating the series, so if you're a fan of those series, that's the animation level which you can expect. The story of Mushi Bugyō is the eighth installment in the last of the titles of the Sunday Anime Project announcement this past year. The action story is set in the Edo area of Tokyo, which takes place in the early 1700s. Tokugawa Yoshihime has created a new magistrate unit, Mushi Bugyō, that are going to protect and help the people in the heart of Tokyo. Each member is a specialist in a martial art with unique fighting skills, so if this sounds like an anime for you, it's going to be coming out and you can bet one of us will be watching it. This was Chiaki and this was your Anime News Break. Don't go anywhere, we'll be back to the show soon.
It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. It's about music and video games and other stuff.
Are you sure that was the moon and not just Australia painted gray?
You know what? If you knock me out, paint Australia gray, and then tell me it's the moon, I'll get over it.
You know, throwing flaming 2x4s into the audience. This is something you don't do if you're just like listening to NPR and sipping on decaf.
But if you did, that would make NPR so much more rad.
She says, oh, I pretty much like everything except rap and country. Then she says, have you heard of Nickelback?
Oh, God, no!
For all this and more, check out ozoneent.com/zonecast or find the Echo Chamber podcast on iTunes.
Hi, this is Melissa Fawn, and I'm the voice of Radical Edward from Cowboy Bebop. Have you seen Feifei? Feifei, are you anywhere around here? Anyway, I wanted to let you know that I am an anime addict. You hear me? I am addicted to anime!
And we're back to the 164th episode of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast.
Yay!
How is everybody today?
Wonderful.
I've been reading some reviews on Ni No Kuni: Wrath of the White Witch, and I am so excited.
So for those of you that don't know, there is a game that came out in Japan 2 years ago, but it finally made it to America. Hooray! It's Ni No Kuni: Wrath of the White Witch.
It's been out here for so long. I was here when it actually came out. I was here when it was being previewed at the Tokyo Game Show, and I played the demo at the Tokyo Game Show, but I didn't really get a good feel for the game, and I haven't played it, even though it's been out on PS3 for 2 years. But
see, now's the time.
Now's the time, yeah. But now that it's out in the States, I'm like, oh, wow, IGN gave it a really good review, so I might as well play it. But yeah, it looks really good. Level 5 is awesome, so...
Level 5 has made some less than awesome games.
They have, but they've also made some amazing games.
Did you play Rogue Galaxy?
I did not, but I heard.
AKA get your travel license.
It's basically like the whole thing is like, if you go to the visa office, on the way to the visa office, you fight monsters and like... You
go to like four planets.
Go to like four different planets, but
is it sci-fi DMV?
Yes,
the game.
And you know, all the other stuff would be so much more exciting if you knew that at the end you were going to get something more than your travel visa. Like,
so anyway, so Ni No Kuni is a game that the reason I mentioned it is because the art is done by Studio Ghibli. And the music is done by Studio Ghibli.
Speaking of Studio Ghibli, can I share a story one of my students told me with everyone on the show that got me really excited?
Okay, we'll return to Ni No Kuni after Chiaki's done with her story.
Okay, I'll make it really quick. So my student was in a bookstore one day, and Hayao Miyazaki walked in.
Oh, that was quick.
Cool story, bro.
Yeah.
He's probably we're so grumpy today.
But,
where are the books? There's books right there. Where's the book I want?
But then the student said that he used to work for a food delivery company as like a delivery boy, and he would deliver to the studio, like the actual Studio Ghibli.
He would
bring them food.
What do they order? What's Miyazaki's favorite food?
I'll ask him next time.
I don't know. I would have asked.
Fish tacos.
Fish tacos.
So, Ni No Kuni has been getting very good reviews. IGN was the first one to post the review, I think. They gave it a 9.4 out of 10. They said it's one of the best RPGs they've played in years, and it has a beautiful mixture of traditional JRPG elements combined with gorgeous graphics, wonderful story, great cast of characters, thoughtful gameplay, and they describe it as like a more fantastic version of Pokemon, and you even evolve the creatures and things like that, so it's...
I don't get that feeling from the DS game. The DS game is probably never going to come out in the States. I don't know if they've got a release date for it or not.
I don't think they will.
But Mitsugi and I are both actually playing the DS version, and it's really cool, but it doesn't have... I don't feel like it has those Pokemon elements that are referred to in the IGN review.
Yeah, that's just what he says. I mean, it's...
What the DS does have is that spell book where you do not leather bound, but it looks like leather bound spell book that you have to look up the spells and do the correct strokes on the DS touch screen to cast spells. It's pretty awesome.
So not to go on and on and on, but just so everybody knows, in Japan you buy the game and you get the spell book with the game. It just comes with the game. That's just how it is. In America you have to get the platinum edition of the PS3 game to get the book.
What?
And what is it, like an extra $40?
That's crazy. I didn't
know that. Unbelievable. So you're basically paying $40 more for stuff that comes for free in Japan. So that sucks.
So look on eBay.
Look on eBay. The book is amazing. It's like a 300-page book.
It's beautiful.
Hardback book with illustrations on every page. It's unbelievable. So anyway, that'll be great. Also, Dead Space 3 is coming out. It's going to be a battle in my mind for which game I play. Dead Space 3, Ni No Kuni.
It wouldn't even be a battle for me.
Okay, well, that's because you're a girl. All right, so...
I don't know if I should be offended or just say you aren't a true anime fan if you even have to question another game over Studio Ghibli.
Let's move on before things get violent, guys.
Everybody in the chat saying Dead Space. Not sexist. One of the games is a whimsical fantasy, and the other one's about blowing the limbs off of demons in space.
I appreciate blowing the limbs off of demons in space just as much as anyone else, but it's Studio Ghibli. They touched
okay,
it.
Okay, all right.
They held it.
They touched it. Miyazaki touched the game. He sneezed on it. All right. He loves it. I don't know. All right. So the main topic, the Ultimate Anime Marathon. We help you get the most bang for your buck during a 12-hour anime marathon, suggested by Chiaki.
So the notion for this is that, say you have a Saturday or a Sunday that you have nothing to do. All of your chores are done. All of your errands are done. You're making it a lazy Saturday, and you're thinking, I want to watch some anime. But not just like, I want to watch a movie, or like, I want to dedicate this day to watching anime and watching stuff that I haven't seen that I need to watch and see.
If your Saturday isn't lazy, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, right?
Especially when you have one day off per week.
So these anime marathons, I figured 12 hours, that would be, you know, you wake up at 10 or 11 and you'd finish by midnight with an hour of breaks or whatever. So it would be a full day, but you'd get to see a lot of anime. So I think the way we did this was 12 hours is 720 minutes. And we basically just added up the run times of everything that we put on our list. I know, I'll ask you guys, I just took the total runtime, which counts stuff like credits.
I did too.
Okay. Me too.
I didn't.
Yeah.
No.
So I would say all of ours will probably be in actuality just under 12 hours. But look at it this way. Whenever the credits are running, grab a snack.
Yeah.
Go to the bathroom.
That's right.
Yeah.
Make some food.
Do some jumping jacks.
See some sunlight. But not too much sunlight. You got another anime to watch. So my 12-hour lineup.
So how are we going to do this? Do you want to mention, do you want to go through your whole list first?
Yeah, I was thinking we could each go through our lists, and then we could discuss it, why we put different things where and whatnot.
And we'll post the list on the website.
Yeah, they're going to be under the episode page. If you click the episode URL, that's going to sit on the top page for a month or two. Then you can find the show notes, so you can copy it down. But so my 12-hour lineup. I start with the comedy OAV. And technically, my total lineup is 730 minutes, which is 10 minutes over the 12 hours.
You just had to, you know.
Well... Jeez. Here's what I figure. As I said, it counts
breaking
the credits,
rules.
So you'll probably get about 10 minutes that way through the various shows, number one. And number two, I listed it as optional. So if you want to stick to the 720 minutes specifically, then, you know, you can not watch it. But if you want to throw it in there, you can. So comedy OAV, 10 minutes. The next one
fantastic.
Is the Read or Die OAV.
I really don't know if you can get more out of just 10 minutes than with a comedy OAV. There aren't really that many 10-minute long animes, and if there are, they don't deliver that kind of quality.
Yeah,
in just 10 minutes.
And that's why it made the list, and especially I put it at the top because, like I said, you can make it more easily optional that way. And two, it's kind of a nice taste to get started. Something short, something sweet.
I think it's worth noting that it's in. I don't know if you said it's in Genius Party, the anthology film.
I didn't.
Okay, yeah. So finding it separately, you'll probably have to go online to do that because otherwise, it's just on the Genius Party DVD that I don't even know if it came out in the States. I think it. Oh, is it Genius Party or Digital Juice? It might be Digital Juice.
I don't know, but the Japanese title is Kigeki.
Yes.
Which might make it easier.
So, my next one is the Read or Die OAV. That's going to run you 90 minutes. So now we're up to 100 minutes.
I fully agree with this one, and I don't know if I actually put this... I did not put it on my list. I think I was going to put it, but when I saw that Chiaki had it, I decided not to.
Well, the reason why I put it is this OAV is fantastic for, as far as 90 minutes goes, it's fantastic for comedy and animation and action. And
the pacing's fantastic.
Yeah, the pacing and the music's great, as you know if you've listened to any of our news breaks. But
so nothing will kill a marathon quicker than being bored.
Yes.
Yeah, no kidding. Interesting story about my life. The first time I ever saw the Read or Die OAV was 1 month after September 11th. And those of you who have seen the first episode of the Read or Die OAV knows that they crash a big paper airplane into the World Trade Center. This was 1 month after September 11th at an anime convention.
Prediction? Anybody? No?
Or okay. Just bad it taste was, of was, the anime convention.
It was very awkward in that viewing room.
Oh, man. So yes, that does happen in Read or Die OAV, but so maybe don't watch this anime marathon on September 11th.
No.
that's my only I guess note. So next, taking us 80 more minutes, so 100 to 180 minutes into the marathon, is Ghost in the Shell, the original movie. And this is one of those, a lot of what I put on here is a combination of things that are just really good that I think a lot of people haven't seen. And a combination of, if you haven't seen this, it's a classic and you need to watch it. Even if it's not something that's generally up your alley, the Ghost in the Shell original movie is probably, I would argue, one of Mamoru Oshii's greatest works in the anime industry.
I would say that's probably true. I'm just shocked that it's 80 minutes because it feels way longer than that to me.
It does.
It does, but that's actually it. That's the correct length.
You think I got the facts wrong, Mitsu? Are you checking up on me? But
actually, I was checking because it did seem short.
Well, that doesn't say good things about the pacing of the movie if it's only 80 minutes and it feels like 2 hours or something.
Exactly. But it is a classic, and it is something that I think really did a lot in anime history, especially for the cyborg sci-fi type niche drama. And because the pacing is kind of slow in that movie and it's kind of a bit of a head trip, I followed it up from 180 to 270 minutes, so a 90-minute movie.
This is the original Ghost in the Shell.
Yes, yes. Okay. This is the first original, what was it, 19... I don't even think it came out in 2094, was it?
I already closed the link, but it's not new.
Yeah, not new.
From the 90s.
So following up Ghost in the Shell to not put something that's slow and slow back-to-back is Tokyo Godfathers. From the late Satoshi Kon. I debated Tokyo Godfathers or Millennium Actress because they're both, I think, arguably his greatest works. But I picked Tokyo Godfathers just because I think everyone could use a pick-me-up. And that movie's hilarious and touching and fantastic and beautifully animated. And for 90 minutes, you must watch it.
Yeah, that movie's almost perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like Satoshi Kon.
Yeah, so that is why Tokyo Godfathers made the list. Moving on, for the next 120 minutes, and this is the longest thing on my list.
Yeah, I see that you took the route of more volume of shows rather than throwing like a 5-hour block of Bebop in there or something.
I did. I felt like if you're gonna watch 12 hours, you might as well see how. I wanted to see how many good anime I could fit in 12 hours. So at the end of the day, how many anime you could say you watched that day?
I actually think we all sort of took this approach. And I do want to say that it's not that, like, there aren't anime full-length series that I wouldn't put in an anime marathon, because I could easily put 12 Kingdoms or GTO or something in there, but, I mean, is it really, it just doesn't feel right to watch three or four episodes of a 30-episode show and then be like, well, I didn't get to really see the story, I just kind of saw the start of it or something. So that's why we chose OVAs mostly, I think.
So my next one, at 120 minutes, my longest run time, is the Samurai X Trust and Betrayal OVA. And
I just touched myself.
We just reviewed this, so I don't think I have to go back into that whole gushingness, but as we said before, it's arguably the best anime ever created.
Episode 163.
So,
Yeah, last episode?
Yeah, I believe it was.
163.
Oh, no, two episodes ago.
Yeah, two episodes ago.
162. That was 162.
But, Yeah, so it's fantastic, and for some reason, again, maybe this is just the younger anime crowd and generation shifting, but I feel a lot of people haven't seen it. A lot of people have, don't get me wrong, but I feel like a lot of especially newer fans haven't seen it, and you need to.
They'll watch it, and they'll go, where are the up-the-skirt shots? Where are the underage girl asses?
You mean anime didn't have that at one point?
Where's the moe? Isn't anime all about moe?
So now we're about halfway through. We're at 390 minutes. The next one after Samurai X is Pokoroso. I had to put a Ghibli film on there, number one, or specifically a Miyazaki film. And I feel like Pokoroso is one of the, as far as Miyazaki films go, one of the more underappreciated films.
Absolutely.
That is fantastic. Not to mention, after Samurai X, Trust and Betrayal, a story about a flying pig. I mean, I know there's depth to it because it's Miyazaki, of course, yeah. But a story about a flying pig is relaxing and comical and fantasyful, and I obviously couldn't put two things back to back.
Yeah. And for those of you,
Samurai X.
For those of you that don't know the Japanese name, Kurenai Nobuta.
Yes.
The crimson pig.
Hey, he is crimson. Yeah. He's basically the Red Baron, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I mean, yeah.
After Pokoroso, another thing that's a little more of a relaxing watch, and something I watched recently, thank you, Yupa, a 45-minute little OVA called Hotarubi no Morie. And the reason why this one made it on here is I wanted something that was kind of like I wanted a romance. So far, none of these really have been romance. And I wanted something on there to satisfy the kind of romance and love, and that's what this OAV is about. It is a purely romance OAV. And so I put it on there because I also wanted something newer. A lot of these are older anime, and I wanted to represent something newer. So that's 45 minutes. Now we're at 525 minutes, taking us another 60 minutes. Speaking of romance...
Time to sob your eyes out.
Speaking of romance, but on the other side, Byosuko 5 centimeters per second. I also had to have something from Makoto Shinkai on there, because I think he's probably one of the biggest up-and-coming... I mean, I guess you could say he's already arrived.
Oh,
but,
yeah, I think so.
But I'd still call him up-and-coming when you compare him to greats like Miyazaki.
Shinkai has a lot of movies on here.
I do.
I guess movies are sort of the way to go with a marathon like this. I think if you're going to do a series, it's either just one series for 12 hours, or in which case you all better like it.
Yeah.
Or it's got to be either
OAVs or something.
Movies, yeah. And OAVs. Yeah. Otherwise, yeah. You're just going to... I don't know.
So, to pick you up after Byosuko 5 centimeters, we're now at 585 minutes, is My Neighbors the Yamadas.
Oh.
Yeah.
I just got chills.
And the reason why I put this one
must
on here...
Must play My Neighbor the Yamadas music.
...is because I wanted a Takahashi film from Studio Ghibli, and most people know Grave of the Fireflies, that, and I didn't... If I put Byosuko...
Did you say Takahashi? Takahata?
Takahata.
Okay.
Excuse me, please. Forgive me. I wanted a Takahata film on here, and most people know Grave of the Fireflies, number one. And number two, if I put Grave of the Fireflies after Byosuko 5 centimeters per second...
Suicide time!
The end of Chiaki's... That would be like, Samurai X, Byosuko 5 centimeters, Grave of the Fireflies. Everyone you love will leave you. Everyone you love is dead.
Sorry, I'm not trying
to like... There's no hope in the future.
Wasn't trying to like attack you about Takahata, but somewhere in some multiple places, someone's going, what?
No.
Takahashi?
I appreciate it. Slip of the tongue. But My Neighbors the Yamadas is a fantastic movie. Again, I think out of the rank of Ghibli movies, I'd put it in the list of underappreciated ones.
Oh, definitely.
How about the list of no one saw it?
Everything that Takahata's done, I mean, belongs like right at the top of the best stuff that Ghibli's ever produced.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But My Neighbors the Yamadas is fantastic, and...
I didn't like Only Yesterday.
Okay.
Too slow. Too slow.
That's fair. I think Yamada's, though, I think it is the ultimate slice of life anything.
Yes.
Like, that comes from anime. Like, there's no point, creators, producers of new anime, there's no point in doing slice of life genre anymore because the best has already been done. Just
yeah.
Give it up.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And not to mention, what I really like about My Neighbors the Yamadas, and I mentioned this before, is that it is a true glimpse into Japanese family life.
Yes.
It is one of the most... sincere depictions of what it is to be a Japanese family that I've ever seen in anime. And there are so many anime, you know, you have like, my dad's a Yakuza boss and my mom looks like she's 14. And I'm like, okay, well, yeah, mom looking like she's 14, that might be a little true. But otherwise, you know, that's not how Japanese families act.
It's really honest and heartfelt. Like, it's something really special. And the art is just amazing.
Yeah.
Well, for the last 2 minutes, I've been trying to get my MacBook to load YouTube, but we have no Yamada's music because my MacBook sucks. Thank you, Apple.
My Neighbors the Yamadas is 100 minutes, and it takes us up to 685 minutes. And the last one I put on here was Dragon Ball Z, The History of Trunks at 45 minutes. I put this on here for two reasons. One, if you're a slightly older anime fan and grew up with Dragon Ball Z, it's an homage to ending with what got you into anime. Ending with the beginning. I know, I'm really
full
deep.
Circle. That's nice.
I'm deep and philosophical that way.
There's going to be a very long Dragon Ball Z marathon before this new movie comes out in March.
Yes.
I'm in on that.
The other reason why I put this particular movie and this place, I figure at this point, you've been watching anime for about 11 hours straight. And so your brain is probably starting to turn to mush. And so a Dragon Ball Z episode, as far as Dragon Ball Z, The History of Trunks is the best Dragon Ball Z movie, I think, that
or
out.
Dead Zone. I think Dead Zone is pretty special, but yeah. Yeah, I think between Dead Zone and History of Trunks, yeah, that's the best that ever came out of the franchise.
So, I mean, this movie is fantastic, but you still kind of have the Dragon Ball Z action you'd expect of super-poweredness and awesome fights and popcorn, turn your brain off, finish off the last of the bag, and enjoy the rest of the
movie. I don't know. I think that History of Trunks is kind of like the anti-Dragon Ball Z
it's so
TV
different,
special.
Yeah.
Everybody's dead, and you have two crippled Z warriors left, and one of them is missing an arm, and it's just, you know, what better way to wrap up your 12-hour marathon than 45 minutes of desperation and intensity?
I mean, I think that's part of what makes it so special is that you've got that DBZ action, but there is a real sense of danger. There's, like, impending threat and things that you don't really get from the series because, I mean, come on, somebody is going to
Goku's
go to the
there.
Next level of yeah. Super Saiyan and kill whatever's in their way.
Wait, guys, what level am I on? Four? Five now? Five? Five? Really? Five?
Is it five? Or, okay.
Okay. Super Saiyan 6!
But yeah, I think that's what makes this sets this apart. Yeah, I think it's really good. Good, very good list.
Yeah, so that's as I said, takes us to 730 minutes, which is 10 minutes over 12 hours, but you can either cut comedy or just know that some of the... I mean, I know, like, Byosuko 5 Centimeters has a long credits list. My Neighbors the Yamadas also, so, I mean, you can make up the time, and I didn't feel like being like, without the credits, it's exactly blah, 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 blah.
So, I have a suggestion, and that suggestion is to read your list again. So, for people that are trying to write the list down, okay. They can find it all in one spot.
Sure. So, my list, read slowly, comedy, OAV, or Kigeki. The Reader Die, OAV, Ghost in the Shell, the original movie, not the second one or the series or anything, but the original movie, 1994 or 5 or something like that.
It was 5, I looked it up.
Was it 5? Yeah. Okay. Tokyo Godfathers by the late Satoshi Kon, late great. Samurai X, Trust and Betrayal, a 4-episode OAV. 4 episodes, right?
Yes.
2 episodes.
Is it two? Well, two long ones.
Two 1-hour.
Yeah. Porco Rosso. Hayao Miyazaki, Hotarubi no Morie, a cute little OAV, Byosuko 5 Centimeters Per Second by Makoto Shinkai, My Neighbors the Yamadas by Takahata, also of Studio Ghibli, and Dragon Ball Z, The History of Trunks. So, that is my 12-hour lineup.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
By the time we get to mine, there won't be anything left to say.
You know what I do find interesting is when I looked at all of our lists, they're really different. Mm-hmm. I expected a lot more overlap, but they're not really.
And it looks like we approach this in very different ways, which I think is great because you've got like three different, totally different in style and in approach marathons to choose from. So
yeah, or the AAA challenge, do all three in a month.
Oh snap!
or you could just do mine.
We should offer a prize
because we all know mine's the best.
We will say your name on the show. Honor system.
Honor system, right?
All right, well, I'm going to jump into my list. The way I approached this was basically I wanted to choose things that I thought kind of shaped how I became an anime fan and,
oh, that's cool.
You know, give that to people. And, you know, if you sit down with somebody and say, hey, we're going to watch 12 hours of anime and make you a fan, this is how we do it. And the way I ordered them was basically longest to shortest because I felt that would get you through the 12 hours a little bit easier. But right off the top, I have the six-episode OAV Golden Boy.
So educational.
I am so happy you put this on your list, Cram.
It's kind of a guilty pleasure, but I love Golden Boy. Golden Boy is...
BMO, baby.
He's perverted a little bit. You know, it's a little bit perverted. It's very funny. Like, genuinely funny, which is something that I don't think you get a lot from anime.
Golden Boy reminds me that character archetype reminds me of, like, an Onizuka character archetype. Like, badass... Seems to be really goofy, but has a great heart and likes the ladies.
Yeah, he is a lot goofier than.
Oh yeah, but that kind of ballpark of character.
Yeah, definitely. But I think that's kind. I think this is essential viewing for anyone who calls himself an anime fan. I mean, Golden Boy is one of those old OAVs that you just got to get around to sometime.
Though I will say there are titties in this, so maybe if you're like 12 or 13.
Are they?
No.
Is it real new?
There's no titties in this.
I thought there was a scene with her on her BMO baby where they're straight up titties.
No, I don't think
really?
There are. There are some panty shots that are actually censored on the DVD that I have.
It's still not for kids.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there is the first episode where the office manager has, like, the porn star, like, elastic, you know, top where you can see every single square inch outline of her nipples through it.
I mean, there's a lot of sexuality like in the show, but I think the most sexuality, like the most sexual thing that happens in the show is probably that woman on her motorcycle.
Oh, yeah. God, yes.
I am just saying, though, if you're like 12 years old and maybe your parents are on the more conservative side and on the cusp of letting you watch anime, this might not...
But to be fair, I think I was 12 when I watched this the first time.
No, I'm not saying a 12-year-old can't watch it. I'm just saying assess your situation carefully.
Make wise choices.
But I guess that goes with all of our lists. I mean, I made my list with more of a adult mindset, but I think anyone of any age, if they're an anime fan, could enjoy it.
Yeah. And that one actually is all six episodes will run you about 180 minutes. So that's 3 hours of Golden Boy right off the top. But, you know, everything you watch will be shorter and shorter and shorter. Next up on the list is the six episode series. I don't know if it's technically, I guess it did air on TV, but it is Foolie Cooley. I think Foolie Cooley is a really good way to kind of get a feeling for what Gainax does and how they approach, animation and stories and their character designs and all this kind of stuff. And I think it's like the whole package. Like, if you want to know Gainax, watch Foolie Cooley and you'll have a really good idea of who they are as a studio. And they're just one of those names that you need to know.
Yeah.
And this of course shaped my fandom as well. And it's, I think it's really funny, really interesting, kind of weird and off the wall, very, very pretty. And I think it's got a lot to say about growing up and becoming what you think is a man or a woman or a person of responsibility. And it's all buried under a bunch of really goofy, awesome, frenetic kind of craziness.
Well, I was going to say, too, if you're feeling a little fried out at this point, I really think that this is a good one because Foolie Cooley to me is like one of those shows where you can turn your brain off and just go on this visual roller coaster of guitars whacking people over the fate head and robots coming out of nowhere and, you know, crazy Haruko being crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can look for those themes and enjoy it at a deeper level. And I think that shows the sophistication this show has is that you can do that with it. It's not a show that just is I'm going to be serious and present serious ideas and make you be serious.
I mean, you don't have to read that stuff into it, but I think that stuff is there. And I think that's why it was kind of so important when it came out, is that it reached out and touched a lot of people. And it was so important to a lot of people and got shared a lot by a lot of anime fans and probably brought a lot of new fans into anime fandom. Basically, you know, this is crazy. It's beautiful and it looks awesome and it's nutty and here, watch this. And I think that's a good choice for this list. And that'll run you about 138 minutes. So we're in, I don't know, I don't have a running total, but we had Golden Boy at 180 minutes and Fooly Cooly at 138 minutes. And next up is the Katsuhiro Otomo film Akira, which is, of course, essential viewing for anyone. Beautifully animated, really great story until the end where it just gets wacky and not, doesn't make sense to anybody. If you think you understand the ending of the film, you're wrong.
You're wrong.
Yeah. I don't think the filmmaker knows what the end means. But it's really good and really interesting. And of course, it also brought a lot of fans into anime fandom.
Well, it was the first anime film to be brought over to the States in theaters. Mm-hmm. It was the first one, which is a huge milestone in anime.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's worth watching. I mean, I don't know if you guys have anything to say about Akira or what your experience with this film was.
Well, I've seen it about 10 times.
Yeah.
I think that it's a really good movie. It's important to see it if you haven't, just because it's one of the movies that helped bring anime to America. It's probably the movie that Katsuhiro Otomo is most known for, and he's quite a famous director in Japan. And the animation and the style of the movie holds up easily. It's been 25 years, but it still holds up.
Yeah, it looks great.
The interesting thing to me about this film in particular is I feel like the generation maybe just before ours, to be honest, who were maybe closer to our age when it came out in theaters, if they know nothing, I've met adults who know nothing about anime, but they know Akira because it came over, because it made that impression. Same here in Japan. Everyone knows Akira. Love it, hate it, you know, think it's cracked out and stupid. It doesn't matter the opinion. People know it, and that says something, which I think is important and says a lot about what it is as a movie and what it did for the anime industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember Akira as a movie with incredible pacing.
Yeah, it does have really good pacing, but it's very deliberately paced, which means that this 125 minute movie, you will feel every minute of it. I think it actually feels every bit of 125 minutes, and it does feel kind of long. But
I agree that it's long.
That's a good
thing
for this film, I think.
I agree that it's long, but it's not boring.
No, it keeps moving, and it's very deliberately paced, but it's
as you said in a few episodes ago, it has a lot of action beats.
Yes, it does.
Lots of action occurring.
Yes, it does. And because it kind of feels as long as it is, the next thing on my list kind of breaks up the pace a little bit, and it is the anthology film Robot Carnival. Now, I don't know how popular this is. It aired on the Sci-Fi Channel years and years and years ago, and again shaped my fandom, as did basically everything on here. And it's basically 9 short films with the theme of robots. So you've got some comedy, you've got some action, you've got a little bit of romance, some drama, and some really sad kind of melancholy short films in here. But they're, by and large, really, really beautiful and really touching, and I think that all of them have something special to say. But of course, as in all of these anthology films, there are some hit and miss ones. But I think it's worth seeing, and it's an older film. I think it came out in like 1985 or something like that. Maybe I'm not sure. 1987.
But I mean, at least when you're doing something like a 12-hour marathon, if you do get to one of those that you're kind of bored with, you can go make a sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, okay, well, I've got, you know, 5 or 10 minutes here, so I'm going to go do something else for a minute. Have a break. Have you guys seen this? Have you guys seen Robot Carnival?
I haven't, actually. It's kind of now on my list of things that I need to watch in my next anime marathon. Yeah,
it's really great. I think it's definitely worth seeing. And the next thing on my list, it will... if you're not careful, it will bring this marathon to a screeching halt. Oh, I didn't say how long Robot Carnival was. Robot Carnival is 90 minutes. So we've got 180 minutes, 138 minutes, 125 minutes, 90 minutes. The next one is 89 minutes, so just a minute short of
what Robot Carnival was.
Very important film. But again, if you're not careful, it will bring this marathon to a screeching halt, and that is Grave of the Fireflies.
I didn't want to touch it. You went there.
Oh, I went there. I had to. It was. It's.
I understand.
So important. So important to, I mean, the industry for one. But so important to me as a fan, and it showed me what animation was capable of, and what it could do in the genre of drama, and you know, as a tearjerker, just as a tearjerker, because I watched this thing. I mean, honestly, I think I've maybe seen this movie only twice because I can't bring myself to watch it. It is that emotionally wrecking. So next up on that, and that comes in at 89 minutes. Next up on my list is not something that shaped my anime fandom because it came out too recently, but it is the series Level E, but only the first three episodes. I like this series a lot. It's only 12 episodes, but the first three episodes, I think, give a really good feeling for the main character of the show, Prince Baka, and his antics and the type of person he is. And I also think the first three episodes are the funniest. So I recommend just watching the first three episodes because they're really funny and really cute. And, you know, it's something that really will bring you up out of the muck that is Grave of the Fireflies.
You'll need a break.
But those three episodes will come to 72 minutes. And then the last thing on my list is from Makoto Shinkai, and that is his first film, Voices from a Distant Star. Now, I know that I'll probably get a lot of hate for this, but I think this is the strongest thing he's ever done. No, I'll get hate for what I'm about to say.
Oh.
I think this is the strongest thing he's ever done. I like what he does, but everything that he makes is so drenched in nostalgia and manipulative kind of sadness, like you know, stock sad things, that I think that he kind of needs to go back and think about some of his more interesting priorities or interesting motivations when he was making this film. And this film is tragic in a really interesting way. It's sad and beautiful, and everything about it is something that you haven't seen before. But it lives within tropes that you're somewhat familiar with, being kind of sci-fi, space opera, mecha thing, but then brings it to kind of it's a very, very small story, but at the same time feels very big. And it's only 25 minutes long. And it says a lot and does a lot in that short 25 minutes, and I think it's definitely worth seeing. And it's one of the only true independent productions in anime.
Yeah.
He made everything. He did everything on
even
a Mac
was a,
Pro.
Of a voice.
Yeah, voices and everything. Recorded all the voices, did all the animation, everything on a Mac Pro, and it's super impressive. So Voices of a Distant Star is my last one, and that brings my total running time to 719 minutes, 1 minute shy of the 12-hour mark. And yeah, I think that'll keep you busy.
You want to read the list one more time?
Yeah. From the top, Golden Boy, Fulikuli, Akira, Robot Carnival, Grave of the Fireflies, the first three episodes of Level E, and Voices from a Distant Star.
Okay, so my list... I don't have very much time to do this.
Sorry.
I have about 4 minutes.
Go.
So the first, I kind of did them, I rearranged them from oldest to newest, and after looking at it, almost all of them are old. But what can I say? So the first anime on my list is a movie, one that no one has said yet, starting it off with Lupin the Third, Castle of Cagliostro.
I almost put that on my list.
Made in 1979, one of Miyazaki's first works. A fantastic movie that does true justice to Lupin in a way that none of the other Lupin material does justice. A true fairy tale-esque movie that is something you probably haven't seen because of its age, and we'll get you started off right. You can't go wrong. Lupin the Third, Castle of Cagliostro. So, and the second one on the list is kind of like my comedy of sorts, and that is M.D. Geist.
Oh my god.
A little bit of sarcasm.
Well, we've talked about it enough. Might as well.
First OVA of M.D. Geist. If you feel like watching the second OVA to finish it, why not? But M.D. Geist is just hilariously bad, and there's so many jokes in the anime community about how bad Geist is that you can't get the joke unless you've seen it, and you can't say the jokes unless you've seen it, and you'll laugh your ass off at how terrible this anime is. So it is a true comedy that's not meant to be a comedy at all, made in 1986. My third anime on this list is another old one from 1993, The Pipe Dream of James Cameron, Battle Angel Alita, the OVA, the story of a doctor who finds a trashed cyborg in a scrapyard, revives her, and she sort of goes through the search for the meaning of life and, you know, what it is to be a living thing and be a cyborg, and that, you know, the grapple that has. And
nothing really deep or meaningful.
Is that sarcasm?
Yes.
Okay. Battle Angel Alita is a classic manga and anime that most people haven't seen by now because it's just too old, and it's a little bit sad that that's the way it is, but what can I say?
Battle Angel. But if James Cameron ever makes it into a movie.
He's now a, whether he wants to be or not, James Cameron is now a slave to Avatar. That's all he will make until he retires. That's it.
I don't think he'll complain about being a slave with how much money it makes.
James Cameron has so much money already. He's got, what, $1 billion probably? You got to think that at this point, he should be making his movies for the art of it and not for making more money, because does he really need more? But he's just, the studios won't let him do anything else. These next two are quick, because we've already said them. Yeah, someone in the chat says they're already planning Avatar 4. Already.
4.
Give me a break. So, Dragon Ball Z History of Trunks. Without looking at any of the other lists, I put this on here. It's only 47 minutes. And gives you, in summary, the best thing that Dragon Ball ever offered, in my opinion. So, check that out. Then I have Golden Boy, but I didn't put the whole thing on here because I just couldn't bring myself to lose 180 hours to it. There were too many things I wanted to put on.
180 minutes, not hours.
180 minutes.
That's a different marathon.
So, I picked what I thought were the best episodes. The first episode, which is the introduction to whatever the hell's name is, Kentaro Oe. And I picked the fifth episode, which is the motorcycle episode with the BMO, of course, because it's just the most outlandish. And then I picked the sixth episode, which sort of wraps everything up.
I think that's a good point with Golden Boy, is that you can skip around, because each of the episodes are their own little story, and you don't really lose anything by skipping. Not really.
Next, I threw in another older film that most people haven't watched. I threw in Magnetic Rose from the Memories trilogy, directed by Koji Morimoto. 1995. It's one of the rare, well-done horror anime. There really aren't very many horror anime out there. If they're, you can't,
not a good one. Not ones that are actually scary.
And you can't really call Hellsing, you know, a horror anime or something like that. People do, but it's not really horror. Magnetic Rose survives on its suspense. It's a suspense anime. It's very rare. Someone's ringing my doorbell downstairs. A random Japanese person has decided that it's important to tell me that there is a sale at the grocery store on wine. You can't miss that. It's very important. So, Magnetic Rose is a great film that you should watch. It's only 44 minutes, so... The next one I have on here is another show that I thought most people haven't seen. It's very interesting, and it's the largest chunk of time I've given to anything on my list, and that is the Ayakashi Samurai Horror Tales, specifically Bakeneko, because Bakeneko is the last three episodes of the series, and it's the story of a mysterious cat monster that has who is seeking to unleash its wrath upon a family that wronged it. And this was such a loved section of the show that it actually created an entire other series, Mononoke. Very artistically done, so interesting. I really recommend that people go watch the Bakeneko section of the show, because it's actually somewhat of a horror show also, and I don't know, I feel like most people haven't seen Ayakashi. It was overlooked, but it contains three classic horror tales from Japan.
I haven't seen it. I've seen some of the live-action horror tales from Japan that are kind of in this vein, but I haven't seen this one. I have to get around to it.
It's very interesting. It's actually 13 episodes long, but I just pulled out the three episodes because they're completely self-contained stories, so you don't have to watch all three of them. Then I have Redline, because...
Of course.
If you haven't seen Redline... Yeah, you haven't lived life yet. I don't know what to say.
I think if this movie had the chance, if someone would give this movie the chance and release it a little bit wider, because I know it came out in theaters in the U.S., but it didn't get a very wide release. If you gave this movie a chance, it could do for the industry what Dragon Ball did for the industry years ago, and Full Metal Alchemist did for the industry, and Naruto did for the industry, and it would get a lot of people into it because it's something fresh and new, and it can. I think it's got a lot to.
It's so amazing, yeah. And probably the most beautiful anime I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
So, finally on the list is a show that a lot of these shows on the list are from my panel that I did, the best anime you haven't seen, but the OVV Denpateki Nakanojo, which is 84 minutes long total, made in 2009. It's the story of a high school boy who is a delinquent, and the show is two self-contained stories that just will crush you and blow you away with shock value. Some of the stuff in this, it's not a show for kids. Denpateki Nakanojo is really intense.
Whenever you showed this on your panel, like,
I had to give a disclaimer because, I mean, it's too much for little kids. I was like, hey, parents, if you have little kids in the audience, this is not something that you want them seeing.
No, I mean, like, not just the disclaimer, but people would cheer for this anime. Like, that's how into it they'd get.
This anime is Denpateki Nakanojo, and it's difficult for me to spell it without taking forever, but it's the English title is Electromagnetic Girlfriend.
Or you could go to aapodcast.com after the episode is released and check the
episode.
Yeah,
the list is on the website. So, had to be quick, but my list is, again, Lupin the Third, Castle of Cagliostro, M.D. Geist. You can't go through life without having that joke in your life. Battle Angel Alita, Dragon Ball Z History of Trunks, Episodes 1, 5, and 6 of Golden Boy, Magnetic Rose, Ayakashi Samurai Horror Tales, the Bakeneko arc, Redline, and Denpateki Nakanojo will take you up to just about 30 minutes under the 12-hour mark, but I figure everybody needs to, like, have a breather, you know? So,
you're so nice, you give them breathers. I'm like, anime!
No breather for you. So what did the guy at the door want?
It was a package. I pretended to be you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he won't know because, you know, because male and female Western names all sound the same.
I was just like, give it to me and go away.
Anyway, so we're going to take another quick news break. And when we come back, we're going to blow through these impressions and tackle a review on Code Breaker. So stay tuned and we'll be back in a minute.
Hey all you England anime fans out there, this is Chiaki and this is your Anime News Break. First up, once again for you anime video game fans out there, if you're a fan of the Record of Argrist War series or Hyper Dimension Neptuna, Compile Heart's official website has given out information on the video game adaptation of Koshi Tachibana's Date a Live light novel series for the PS3 console. Now, this information which they have given out include the game's release date, character images, and the title. Imaginably, the title is Date a Rene Utopia, and it is supposed to come out this summer. Rene is voiced by Kana Hanazawa and is the protagonist Shido's childhood friend, as well as the new heroine who joins the cast. The character designs are, well, what you'd expect from a light novel called Date a Live, but, well, they're kind of cute looking, and I'm sure will sell a bunch of figures. In other news, something interesting, there is a new studio out there that is a collaboration between French and Japanese animators. It actually launched this past October, but it's starting to get ground. The studio is called Yapico Animation, and, well, some of the people involved with it are rather impressive. They include Eddie Mahong of Casher and Sins and Lupin the Third, The Woman Called Fujiko Mine, director Jean-Louis Van de Stock of Monster Buster Club and Wrecked It, and Eriko Kubokawa of Full Metal Alchemist and The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. So like I said, some very impressive names. For its first animation projects, they are teaming up with the French creative team, Catfish Deluxe, to create two 26-episode series titled Plume and Power Bag. Plume is about a girl who travels to a strange and distant land to look for her little brother, and Power Bag is about a boy who finds a magical backpack. The teams also plan to make a feature film titled Happy Land, about a utopian city that seems so perfect on the outside, but no one is allowed to complain. The studio is currently seeking funding for all projects, so it'll be interesting to see what makes it through, but here's to hoping, because they sound interesting. And finally, if you're a fan of Kuroko no Basuke and went to Comic Market or tried to purchase some of the Comic Market goods that circulated around the internet after the fact, you might have been sad that, of course, Kuroko no Basuke, as well we've mentioned before, did not make it to Comic Market. But the committee has announced for Comic Market that they will be accepting the previously barred Kuroko no Basuke circles at their next event, which will be held this summer. So if you're a huge fan, it's coming your way. This is Chiaki, and this was your Anime News Break. Don't go anywhere, because we'll be back to the show soon.
From the creators of Method to Madness.
You know, people on the game are like, get back there and start grenading people. And the guy's like, no, man, I'm talking to Nathan Fillion. Shut up.
It's the Alpha Counter Podcast.
People on bicycles are the biggest douchebags.
Hey, man, I'm riding green here.
Zero carbon footprint, bitches.
You know what my answer to that argument is? Funk.
Find them on iTunes and alphacounter.com.
アニメアディクトアノニモスはエイミープレックスとご覧のスポンサーの提供でお送りいたします。
Welcome back.
We missed you.
To the 164th episode of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast. It's time to find out if the new season of anime is bad or good. So,
who wants to go first?
It's always an adventure. I am going first.
Okay.
Because I have two.
Well, go for it, Mitsugi.
Oh, I was brave enough today to tackle Vivid Red Operation. I was initially, you know, a little bit worried about it because it's made by the guy that did Strike Witches, which, for those of you that don't know, is a show that got a lot of controversy because it has over-the-top lolicon in it, which, you know, who can live life without over-the-top lolicon? It's very important. And so, you know, but I had heard good things about it, so I thought I'd give it a shot. The show of Vivid Red Operation is definitely something that's been done before, but I enjoy it. The first episode introduces the main characters, Akane and Aoi. They're both high school girls that wear really, really tight pants that allow the director to give a lot of tight-ass pant up-the-skirt shots of these 10-year-old girls. And
you
it's
know, if you're
very
into
erotic.
That, I'm sorry, you're creepy. I'm just going to say it outright. If you want to look...
You tell them.
If you want to look at the ass and, like, close-up of, like, vagina, I'm just gonna say it. If you want to look at that...
Preach.
You're creepy.
Preach. Amen.
You are creepy.
Amen, sister.
I mean, if you watch the show and you're just like, oh, okay, they're gonna have that. I'm not saying that then you're creepy. I'm saying if you're watching the show going, yes.
So if you're watching in the video, you're gonna see several interesting mech designs. For example, the girl's grandfather is an inventor. And he has invented several things. One of the things, he invented this thing called the doggy for the girl. It's like, that's what she calls it. It's like a ride machine, that it's like a hovercraft that she rides on. It's pretty neat. Basically, I don't want to go too long because it's an impression, and I am the worst offender in the world at this.
But it looks pretty, though.
It's a very beautiful show. The story is quite simple, okay? The world has been made very green, and by that I mean there's not a whole lot of pollution. This island section of the world functions via this very powerful power plant that powers the three islands. And out of nowhere, this giant mech robot thing appears and it starts to attack. So it's a lot like Ava, in that there's a giant robot mech monster And it's threatening the island, and it's blowing up all the... It's taking on the Navy and the Air Force, like, you know, very easily. So, of course, the grandfather has invented this thing called the Vivid Red System. And, of course, Akane and Aoi are the ones that end up piloting the system, and so they have, like, these key things, and they turn it on, and they turn into these, like, magical... I think it's Magical Girl. I'm gonna say it's Magical Girl. It feels like that to me. They go through the whole transformation sequence, but they're not, like, wearing clothes like Sailor Moon. They have... This
costume design is great.
Part of their outfit... Yeah, the costume designs are very good. Part of the outfit is machinery-based. They have, like, jetpacks in their shoes, and they fly around, and... They fight the mech. They're the only ones that can fight it, and at one point they actually fuse into one person, and that's what's called like the Vivid Red operation. But this, in the beginning, it's Vivid Blue, because eventually I guess they're all gonna fuse. There's four of them, I think, and at the end of it all, they'll all fuse into one and become Vivid Red, which is what I'm predicting. But so they fuse into the Aoi and Akane fuse into one being. They become something that looks like Cosmos. It has a giant sword and or a giant hammer, and she just smashes the monster, and it dies. And then they go on to the second episode, and their school gets destroyed in the battle, so they go to a new school, and they make more friends. They meet another girl named... what's her name? I can't remember. But she's the blue... She's the green one. She's a kendo master, and she also is given the power. And in the second battle, in the third episode... The green girl and Akane fuse, and they take on the other monster. So, it definitely has some lolicon undertones. There's a lot of panty shots that are quite unnecessary.
Undertones?
Whatever you call it. It has panty shots of little girls, and they're not even panty shots. It's like tight swimsuit ass shots. And when they fuse, they kiss each other on the forehead, which I'm sure is just like gratuitous. Oh, I'm feeling... That gets me turned on for some people, watching like 10-year-old girls kiss each other on the forehead. Otherwise, I actually don't hate the show. I mean, I recommend it for people who like magical girl stuff. That's pretty much it. I mean, there's no mecha. They're not mechs or anything like that, the way that I had initially thought there was going to be mecha designs in the show. Unless you're talking about the monsters, because they sort of feel like that. But overall, it's not super bad. The animation's really good. It looks beautiful. The outfits of the magical girl things are very nice. And overall, I'm somewhat enjoying it. It's not wonderful so far, but I'm interested to see where it'll go, and we'll find out. So it's called Vivid Red Operation, and currently airing. We're up through episode 3. So
my impression is on Boku no Motoga Osaka Okan. This is another one of the 3-minute anime series, and it's very funny, very cute. It's about a boy whose sister lived in Osaka due to family reasons, and they recently reunited. And the entire, each episode is about one point of why Osakans are different from people from Kanto. So they talk about things from culture to words in Osaka, they call them different things, different words. And it's cute and funny. I recommend it for people who know and like Japanese culture. You'll get it better if you kind of get that a little bit.
But we don't know Japanese culture. That guy that reviewed us on iTunes said so.
But 'cause then you'll kind of get why it's... You'll get a little bit more of the jokes of why it's funny. But it's really cute in 3-minute episodes, and I recommend watching it. Back to you, Mitsugi.
Whoa.
I can do one. Can I go next?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yay, I'm so excited. Okay, so my impression is from Bakumatsu Gijinden Doman. And so basically this story takes place in Kyoto, Japan in the late 1800s. Bakumatsu Gijinden Roman tells the story of Manjiro, a gambler and a helper by day, kind of a jack-of-all-trades helper, and a Robin Hood-esque superhero known as Roman by night. With the help of his kooky cohorts, he fights to take back what was unjustly stolen from the people. And that's just a bunch of stuff. Whatever you have had stolen from you unjustly, he'll get it back, no problem.
Like Get Backers.
Where's Fujiko?
That's right. Actually, in the subtitle, they translate him as a Get Backer. Like, that's what
fun.
He is. So, he looks like Lupin and sounds like Noronoa Zoro from One Piece. But good seiyuu and character designs from Monkey Punch can't save the audiovisual aesthetics of this show. The show is colorful and pleasing to look at on some level, but the animation is downright horrid at times. Like, it's embarrassing sometimes how bad it is. But the action scenes are, they look like they've gotten the most love, and they turn out largely competent. The music is one of the highlights of the show. The big band jazz type stuff that is synonymous with the Lupin franchise is present and accounted for, although it sounds like a cheaper facsimile of the real thing, but it's still a lot of fun. The story thus far has been largely episodic, with a couple of character through lines loosely connecting everything. A larger story is being hinted at, but nothing has come of it just yet. The cast of main characters are appropriately diverse, but ultimately uninteresting, relying solely on their quirks to garner interest for their arcs, like their individual character arcs. The most interesting character by far is the dual pistol wielding double agent working for the local police, and he shows up in episode 2. And he's actually really cool. Everybody else I don't care about, including the main character.
Oh, no.
The show is lighthearted and goofy, but it wholly lacks the charm that makes Lupin such a classic, and that's clearly what they're shooting for here. They want this to be the new Lupin. And the main character has a time-limited suit of armor that turns him into a Super Sentai Ranger for a few minutes. So there's
what?
That.
Wow.
I know, it's as random as it sounds. But I find that I don't dislike the show, but I don't really like the show. It's just kind of there. And It is based off of a pachinko game, so
that should have been the first clue.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's not really for me, but it hasn't impressed me so far. I can't really recommend it to anybody just yet, but I'll keep watching it and maybe it'll go somewhere.
One note I forgot to say on Boku no Motoga Osaka Okan that you reminded me. The animation is kind of crappy. It's 3 minutes, and you're not watching for the animation. At least I'm not. I'm watching it for the fun cultural notes and the laughs, and it's made me LOL every 3 minute episode. So that's worth it.
Could you both just slowly say the titles of your shows one more time?
Mine was Boku no Imoto ga Osaka Okan, or My Sister is an Osaka something.
Mine is Baku Matsu Gijinden Roman, and it's actually streaming on Crunchyroll right now, so if you just go and check this season's shows, you should see it, and it's the one that looks like Lupin.
Yes, Kaze-kun in the chat, Osaka Mama, but I don't like that translation. It doesn't make sense to me, so, but yes, my little sister is in Osakan. I'm just going to leave it at that. I like that more, but...
Okay, so I have a show here that... is very so-so.
Reverse harem.
It's a hardcore reverse harem show, and I'm trapped in this hell. Anyway,
a bishy show too.
Yeah, bishy reverse harem for Mitsugi. Great. So this is definitely a Kimiko show. Kimiko, where are you? So there is this girl. She's the harem. I think they actually just call her heroine. I don't even remember what her name is. Anyway, there's this girl. She has no memories. At the beginning of the show, she wakes up. She can't remember who she is. She doesn't know who anybody is. And throughout the course of the first 3 episodes, she basically just stumbles around, running into male characters that she knows and who all appear to have a crush on her. And by the end of the 3rd episode, she's basically figured out where she lives. She knows where she works. She sort of knows how she lost her consciousness. She fell off a cliff, like, while she was hiking with her boyfriend. And at the end of the 3rd episode, we're not sure if he, like, pushed her off or what, because...
Is she annoying? Does he have reason to push her off?
She's not really annoying, but the characters are very obnoxious, and I'll explain why. They have the most absurdly over-the-top character designs I've seen in a while. Not only is their hair two-tone, and I mean, like, you'll have... One guy's hair will be green, and then, like, the bottom of it's yellow. One guy will have brown hair, and then the bottom is, like, bright red. Like, Jesus, you people. It's like they bleached their hair halfway down and then just dipped it in, like, neon-colored Kool-Aid. And then, not only that, they're each wearing, like, the most absurd clothing. One guy has, like, this leather bondage suit that he wears. It has hooks all over it. I swear to God, he just gets hooked up to his ceiling every night. And some of them have really obnoxious-looking, like the village people hats. It's just, it's over the top, the male designs, but it's, I guess that's what it is. It's a bishy... reverse harem, and if you like that, that's who should watch the show. Absolutely. But I'm finding the show to be I know this isn't really an impression, but there's not much story. I'm finding it to be very boring. All she does is wander around running into dudes, and they're like, they say, "What, you mean you don't remember me?" And all I can think is that this girl is some raging alcoholic who gets drunk in like bars, and then goes home with dudes for like a one night stand, and then the next day she can't remember. But they remember, and, you know, because that's just how it works, I guess. And, you know, you don't remember me? No, I don't. Oh, my God. Oh, no, don't tell me what I did. It's too embarrassing. I don't want to know my true self. So that's what we're going to find out at the end of the show, that she's actually just a floozy and that her boyfriend got jealous. And so what he did was he pushed her off a cliff while hiking because he just couldn't handle it anymore. A little bit of payback. And no, seriously, this is some, it's supposed to be some kind of a mystery that's going to unravel her memories and there's going to be some story underneath. But really what the show is, it's a reverse harem. In fact, in the opening, they have a sequence where each and every guy kisses her in, like, rapid succession, and that kind of gives away everything. So, I don't know what else to say. It's called Amnesia, and it the title of the show explains exactly what the anime is about, and eventually we'll find out everything that happened, but they're going to make you wait 13 episodes to reveal her memories, so.
All right, so those were our impressions, and now I have a review for you from the previous season. My review is the anime Codebreaker. Codebreaker is a 13 episode series. It started on October 6th of last year. Codebreaker's fun. Codebreaker tells the story of Sakura Koji Sakura, which I think is the worst name ever. Sakura Koji. She is definitely cherry blossomed. She has a new student join her class, but this isn't like any new student. The night before, when she was riding a bus, she saw him burning people alive. She went back the next day, didn't find any evidence
Maybe
of it.
You should tell somebody.
And so she did. She told the police, and they didn't find any evidence of it, and they just wrote it off.
Maybe she was on bath salts.
So she decided that she was going to follow him to try to get, of course, to the bottom of it, and then also, if he was dangerous, to make sure he didn't hurt anyone else in her class or just in general. She has this very strong, like, don't kill people, don't hurt people. She's one of those characters. As she follows him, she learns that he is part of a secret government organization called Codebreakers. These are people with special powers, and it is so important to the series that I forgot where the name came from. Basically, they're people, they each have some kind of special power, and there's a limit to those powers. If they overuse them, they have they call it code lost or something, where they have a lost form where sometimes it's just like you have to sleep, but another one turns into like a 4-year-old who gets drunk on juice.
What?
Another one turns into a cat. Yeah.
These are penalties for you ever using your power?
Yeah.
And then you can't
use your power for like 24 hours.
It sounds a little bit like Darker Than Black.
But each of the code breakers have a rank. The main guy that she follows around, Rei Ogami, is code 06, so he's the weakest one by their ranking system. The Codebreakers don't technically exist. They exist outside of society, which I view as an entire contradiction, because Sakura Koji is like, I know you exist, you're my buddy. They've implied that there's more to her than meets the eye, and I'll get to that in a bit. But they basically do the government's dirty work. They kill the people that the government can't kill. The government can't move against, like, drug dealers, yakuza bosses, people who destroy the world basically one step at a time. And the government can't take any outward action against these people, so they send in the Codebreaker, people whose identities have been erased, and have them exterminate them.
Like mercenaries or...
Exactly. Yeah, okay. That's basically kind of what they are. But of course they have special powers that they use to do it.
Of course they do.
Of course
anime.
They do, yeah. Just as a note, this was directed by Yatsuhiro Irei. Something like that. I don't know. I'm having issues with names right now. He was also the director for Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. He was the director for Alien 9. He actually did the key animation for the Revolutionary Girl Utena opening, which I found interesting. Otherwise, those are pretty much his notable things. He was also the director for Kudau Phantom Memory. So he's been involved with a number of larger shows and well-received shows in the anime community.
Is she one of those girls that has all this dangerous stuff around her, and so she's just, like so many female characters in TV shows and movies, she's just mysteriously drawn to it?
She isn't even mysteriously drawn to it. She runs headfirst into it, and she's like, I'm going to stop you from killing people. And I'm like, girl.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like,
I'm like, girl, this guy can summon fire from his hand. He's like Roy Mustang. Like, you're not going to stop this guy.
Isn't it somewhat of a character archetype, isn't it? Where you have like this girl and she shouldn't be involved, and you know she knows she shouldn't be involved, but she just can't help herself.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, I just watched some guy incinerating people alive. Oh, but I'm going to hang out with him.
I do find her somewhat less annoying, though, than a lot of female characters in anime. I find her a lot less whiny. Yeah, she's like, don't kill people and blah, 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 blah. But I just find her a lot less... Yeah, she is kind of the helpless whatever you want to call it, but she's just not as annoying as I find a lot of girls, which I think made the series a lot more bearable. And there are moments where she grows. So, for example, in the first 6 episodes, there's a scene where she follows Rei Ogami to an apartment, and she thinks it's his, and he tells her, he's like, if you come with me, you can't... You know, what is seen cannot be unseen, basically a conversation. And they walk in, and it's a Yakuza boss, like, headquarters, and they're making drugs, and they're using the people who are hooked on the drugs to help ferry the drugs and then killing them after, once they've used up their worth. And the police are there, two corrupt police officers are in it, and he burns them alive. And then there's this... As she's going through, she's like, you didn't have to kill them. And he's like, they weren't going to listen to reason. They weren't going to do anything. He's like, the only thing that you can do with evil is exterminate it with evil. So he's kind of like an anti-hero. He's like, I do the dirty work, but I don't think I'm a purist. I still kill people, so I'm still not a good guy. But as they're going through the apartment, they find this room with this family who's all been hooked on the drugs and the parents are dead, and there's the daughter left.
Give me them drugs.
And she's completely devastated with her family and her current situation, and she's like, I just want to die. I can't go... There's nothing to go back to. I should just die. And so Ogami takes her and starts strangling her. And, of course, Sakura is like, stop that, stop that. Don't kill her.
Choking her out.
Yeah, he's choking her out. And,
Roga would have so much fun with that.
And she's... And as she's dying...
Where are you, Roko?
At first she's lying there, and then she starts fighting, and she says, I don't want to die. And Ogami lets her go, and he's like, you've been spoiled by life. He's like, if you don't want it, don't take it, but don't act spoiled because you have it. And so the show has those moments where it's trying to be something. It's trying to say something. And it's planting those seeds of trying to have a depth to it, especially in the first like 5 or 6 episodes. The problem that the show runs into is all the way up until the end, one, it doesn't really commit to it. It has, for example, Sakura's parents. Sakura is the daughter of a Yakuza boss, and her dad is like one of those, I'm goofy until I hold a samurai sword and then I turn into a badass characters. And her mom is like 14 and trips all over herself and, you know, wears a schoolgirl uniform. Like, it has those stupid... Sakura runs into these battles with a puppy, and the puppy, like, chews through her ropes to, like, help set her free. Like, it has these stupid hijinks that just cheapen everything that the show is trying to do, and then you can't... When it does have those serious moments, you can't take them as seriously because there's something else going on. Another thing that it does is up at around episode 6, it kind of does a reverse of what you'd expect most shows to do, where it starts introducing more characters. You kind of expect that to happen at the beginning of the show, and then have them introduce characters and then get to the story with the full cast. But they introduce more characters, and they introduce basically all the other codebreakers. So they introduce 5 new characters, along with 1 or 2 others who are also involved in the organization.
So when's the beach episode?
There is no beach episode, thankfully.
When's the bathhouse episode?
There is no bathhouse episode, thankfully.
When's the school culture festival episode?
There is none of that, Mitsugi.
Really?
Yes.
My God.
Sign me up.
Christmas episode?
No. You know, the interesting thing about this show is I wouldn't say there isn't filler, because I think there are maybe duplicate episodes where they've already had an episode that's showing Ogami's, you know, dedication or something like that. But the show definitely dedicates an episode for backstory to the villain, who's one of those villains that's kind of like not really a clear villain because he has good motives, but he's going about it in the wrong way. So there's definitely something to be said for that. And the characters, each of the characters do have a splash of backstory. Not really each of them, but a couple of them get a splash of backstory. But it's not nearly enough. The one who gets the most backstory is the villain, which, if anything, makes you want to relate to him more than anyone else at the end of the day. But it has those moments that it cheapens itself with. The animation is really good, and what this anime survived on is that the action is good. So if you like kind of those supernatural, superpower-type battles, yeah, they're fanciful and out there, and a little ridiculous at times, but they're good, and they're well animated, and they're really entertaining. Half the episodes, I found myself waiting, going, all right, when's the battle happening this episode? So that's definitely true. The show is based off of a manga. I haven't mentioned this yet because I kind of wanted to build up to it, but the show's based off of a manga. It has 23 volumes, and it's still ongoing.
Oh my God.
So it is. They have a lot of content material to work with. Up until the end, they were introducing kind of new characters and new plot points, which makes me feel like there's a second season. I've heard that there might be a second season coming out this year, but I didn't. My impression from the research I did was that nothing has been absolutely solidified as this is happening, this is coming out this day.
I don't get this girl. I don't get it. She's like, she's terrified of this guy.
She's not terrified of him.
Oh, well, she you know, for someone who's so dangerous, and she obviously knows he is, she's just following him around like a puppy.
She's
stupid.
Yeah, but she's trying to do it with this notion that she can stop him from hurting more people. And in the little splash of backstory you get for her, I didn't even feel that bad spoiling it, because it's not anything that, it's almost like an afterthought on an episode, it felt like. But they definitely allude that she has her own powers. They don't even, like, go into it, which is so frustrating. But they definitely allude that she has her own powers. She was adopted by the Yakuza family, and they found her on their doorstep, bloody, one night. But they don't even go into anything, but that's kind of why she has this kind of tick about her, this irrational tick of people. She has to prevent death, is because she had something horrific happen to her in the past that she has some kind of semi-conscious, semi-subconscious memory of. But what I was saying about the manga is the source material is massive. It's still ongoing. And the thing that I wished was that if you didn't have a second season already lined up and in the pot, I wish they had created something that felt more conclusive. Because at the end of the 12 episodes, I felt like we didn't get anywhere. There was definitely a climax, but at the end of the climax, you had people who suddenly became more powerful. They introduced new characters. They introduced potentially another villain. They created more questions about Sakura Koji and Ogami, and things were, you know, the person who you believe to be the actual bad guy, the puppet master, got set free. Like, it's definitely in a space where all of the ends are open. There was only one thing that was tied up, and even that was kind of, at the end of the series, what you thought to be, like, the bad guy, that they dedicated a whole episode to his backstory, ended up, you end up feeling like it was just kind of a precursor to something else.
That must make it really hard to review, because for me, because it's freshest on my mind, the last two things I reviewed were the Ava films, the first two Ava films. And as films, I mean, obviously they're part of something that has, you know, larger content or larger source material to draw from. And I think that one thing that I take for granted from those is that they feel complete.
Yeah.
And that's a really good thing. But if you're watching something that has an ending that doesn't feel like an ending, how can you review it as a whole without it being negative?
And it felt like a to be continued. That's what it really felt like. And if it doesn't get a second season, this anime is really lacking. So overall, as of right now, I've I've debated between a 2 and a 2.5. And really the only thing that's keeping it forward is the fact that it did have good action sequences. But I'm gonna end up giving it a 2, I think, which is just below average, all things considered, just because it's hard to care about the action when you don't really care about the characters and you don't care if they live or die, because you really don't. So, Codebreaker, if you really like action, kind of darker than black-esque superpowers in modern life, then yeah, it'll be right up your alley and you'll probably enjoy it. But know that there's going to be these huge plot issues, so go into it enjoying it as a shonen fighting show rather than, and don't be turned off by the fact that it's 5 guys and 1 girl, because there's no harem aspect to it. Don't expect anything. It's going to promise you things at the beginning that it's not going to deliver.
At least you know it's not Moe.
Yeah, it's not Moe.
Writes checks it can't cash.
Pretty much. So, that was Codebreaker.
Oh, thank you for that review.
That was lovely.
Yeah. Aww. So, this has been episode 164 of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast. It's been nice sharing the evening, the morning, or the afternoon with you. But it's time for us to go. So, come visit us at www.aaapodcast.com. You can find us on iTunes, where this episode will be available shortly. And we're also on Facebook, facebook.com/AnimeAddictsAnonymousPodcast. And of course, live from Japan every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on ustream.tv.
And don't forget about the Twitter feed, now our exclusive live photo feed. And you can find that at twitter.com/AAApodcast.
The closing theme for you is Reason from the anime Hunter x Hunter by the artist Yuzu. And we will be back next week. So,
see you guys.
Until then,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh.